to talk about, just picking up from last month, we talked about how in order to protect every relationship, even boyfriend and girlfriend relationship, I think it's a good thing to practice, you know, faithfulness in that. Now, of course, you know, if your boyfriend and girlfriend, if they break up, it breaks up. It's not like a marriage, like a sin, when a marriage break apart, a divorce. But I think it's also good how you train or what you do in relationship will spill over to your marriage, you know. And I think I remember last month I shared about how there was this one guy that invested, poured into me when I was a young Marine, and he just told me how it was so hard, you know, as a guy who's always said, oh, he'll be a faithful marriage, but all his relationship, boyfriend girlfriend relationship, he's always been like breaking off just to find someone else new. And then now he's married, stuck with one, but he realized, wow, he's been training for years, for a decade of just going with whatever girl, whatever he feels like. And now he says, man, woe is me, I'm just nothing more than like anyone else, just all the other Marine buddies, just like a dog, just everything, they'll just drool, right? So I think that's important to realize in all a relationship, even if you're not married, is we want to cultivate that faithfulness and even that jealous love. Of course, there's a limitation for those in relationship. You know, you don't own that person in the same way as in marriage. And I don't mean just only guy owning the girl, but even the girl, right? Has ownership of some form. Obviously, everything is stewardship, ownership, right? Because God owns everyone ultimately, and it can't be against, you know, sin and out of control. So I think today I want to also as well look at about this theme about adultery. A second look, and the reason why I want to go over this is I want to today. Originally, I had a hard time titling it. I told Nancy I want to title it "The Anatomy of an Adultery," but it just sounds so wrong. So I called it "An Autopsy of an Adultery," just to look at the story. We all know this story in 2 Samuel 11, yes? If you guys know David, David's big sin, his most infamous sin, what is it? Was his adultery with Bathsheba, right? That's like, we always will remember that, right? Matter of fact, when people say the name Bathsheba, I always say, oh yeah, that the one who committed adultery with David. Of course, we know she's more than that, obviously, but that's what the most memorable aspect of them, I think. We're going to look at this, but I want to establish the need. Like, why is it that I want to go over the second time, just a second look? So last week was more the positive part, proactive, of like, we need to cultivate a jealous love and understand our partner's jealousy is a good thing. Actually, it helps protect the marriage. The reason why I think I want to go over this again for a second time is because of the fact that according to statistics, marriages, well, in America today, in the West, is in trouble, yes? The divorce rate is pretty high, yes? It's no longer uncommon. There's no longer even a shame when people say divorce. It's almost like accepted and normal. But I've also, just reading some other statistics, it demonstrates that even unfaithfulness in marriage is very high. So that's why I want to go over this. Even if you're in a relationship, I remember before Nancy and I got married, we talked about the scenario. What would happen if one of us were to be? You know, I know it's a really weird topic, right? I know it might sound really weird, but we talked about that. Like, what is our marriage will be made out of? Will we still be married? Will we divorce? Will we work it out? Or what will we do? I know it might be really weird. Yeah, is that a question you talk about when you go to California and place the kitchen? You know, you pour a drink for your wife and say, oh, you know, or your girlfriend and say, so, if I were to cheat, what would happen? That's kind of weird, right? But I think it's a subject, you know, that it is talking about. Not so much, again, not to say like, oh, I'm going to go and do it. Now I have a free card. But I think this is something that is, you know, we need to know and think about biblically also as well. And also what it would look like to protect that relationship from being like that. The statistics is very grim. According to one article I read that was from July 2nd, the percentage of wives having an affair rose about 40% during the last two decades, from 14.7% in 2010, with the number of men admitting to extramarital affair held constant at 21%, according to the latest data from the National Opinion Research Center's General Social Survey. And it goes on to say the narrowing gap reported by sociologists at Auburn University at Texas, reflects multiple trends. Wives with their own jobs have less to lose from a divorce, and social media have made it easier to engage in an affair. However, men are still more likely to cheat than women, says Yanni, blah, 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 I can't pronounce her last name, director of the AUM Center for Demographics. But the gender gap is closing. So when I'm going over this today, it's not only because I'm just going against the guys, for the women to say, oh, it's for you, you know, man. But it's also the gap in our culture today is the rate of cheating is very high now.
And if I could just read one more article, just to establish, the reason why I'm going over these things is not just to like scare us or whatever else, is to show, I think this is a need. If we were to have a couples meeting, but we never talk about a biblical view of all these things, and also what to prevent, and also to be proactive to, to give antidote so that it won't happen, then we're doing it all wrong. We're only just talking about communication and how to speak to one another, right? We need to actually realize this is an issue that we need to realize. Every one of us, every one of us, have the danger in our heart, prone to always with this. Now, if I can just read one more, it says, most research, this is a summary of a lot of the various studies, right? There are always been studies, sociologists, and blah, blah, blah. So, you read all these studies, they're always coming out with things. But this is a general summary, conclusion of all these studies in general. According to this one individual, most researchers come to this general conclusion that over a third of married men will cheat on their wives, that nearly a quarter of all women will cheat on their husband, and that more than 50% of all marriage will be impacted by one of the spouse being unfaithful. Grim statistics if you think about them. And that's pretty sad, right? I think the ultimate thing with every relationship, and we'll probably talk about it even other months ahead, is, our heart will always say the grass is always greener on the other side, yes, right? Jobs, with this job, like, man, if I only just, or in that job, then the grass is always green on the other side. The ultimate thing I would say to protect every relationship from going astray is you need to make sure that that relationship you're in, you are making it green. If you're focusing on cultivating, on growing it, then you won't be looking around for other green grass. You'll be too busy turning all the dirt in the relationship, all the fertilizer, into something good, right? And that's what Christ does in our relationship, right? The goal is not even to make the grass greener. The goal actually is just to be more Christ-like. Even if the other spouse isn't. And if we do more of that, I think in the long run, you'll see the relationship is greener on the other than the other side. But today I want to go with a little bit of a different direction. I think sometimes relationship people are tempted by thinking, oh, what if I were to be with this person? And I think we don't think that far. We think, oh, what if it's just a beautiful part of, we just have a corporate dinner and I just, just to treat them out or whatever else and call it a day or whatever else. But we don't see oftentimes the long-term effect of sin. So today, it's more, I know this is not a normal Bible study, it's just like, just all the blasts and everything else, but today is the part we're looking at a sin and seeing what it looks like in adultery for the purpose of seeing and when you look at it in the heart of all its aspects, in light of the sovereignty of God, this is not something we really want to go to. So I normally don't preach this way, I think. I don't want to just point out that it's ugly and that's this, because I don't think it's enough for us to say this is a sin and therefore we would avoid it. It's ugly. We actually need to love God, right? Because if you just only feel guilt is not good enough a reason to do what is right in the long run. You might do it in the short term, but then you fail and then you even feel guilty and then you just want to leave the whole thing altogether. It has to be our love with the Lord, which I think biblically, sometimes in the Bible, there are places where we have to just look at the ugliness of sin and just say, wow, this is so ugly, and I don't want to go there. And today is one of those messages. So I want to balance it with last month. If you want to even download on Sermon Audio, apparently anything with marriages on Sermon Audio of our church website are like the top hits with online. So I guess there is a real need of relationship. And apparently, I was really shocked. Last month's thing about jealous relationship, jealous love and marriage, went overly wild, crazy popularity that people just randomly searching for the topic. But I understand why. We see biblically why, right? Light and reality. So let me stop at this point here. Is there any question for what I'm doing? So I know we're going to see a lot of ugliness of sin, but I think there's still the grace of God which I'll come towards. And I'm doing this with the motive of really, because this is what I see the text is, and this is also to balance everything else we. Yeah, sometimes we do have to see the ugliness of sin. Any questions or comments thus far? Okay. So with this, let us go to 2 Samuel chapter 11. We know this story all too well, I think. But I hope we look at it more of the aspect of, I want to look of this to see the horrors, to see the ugliness of adultery, the sinfulness, just the pure ugliness of it, so that we would actually consider the consequences before our heart wandering further. It really is just antidote. Like medicine, right, today? It's a big thing in medical community. It's not just only to fix a problem when someone's sick. It's preventative medicine, right? I.e. like good health and eat well, dieting. Those things are is preventative medicine is so much more important than even when someone's already sick. So today is one of those aspects. I know some of you guys are in the medical field, maybe you know, that's general direction. I don't know, I'm not a doctor or pharmacist or nutritionist or a seminal nutritionist, but I want to look at that today just really so that we have this in our heart to see, whoa, this is what the ugliness of it looked like, and I don't even want to go there to be sober about it. So I wanted to look at the passion of adultery and the characteristics of an adulterer, and also as well the frustration of an adulterer. Three things with this. The first part I want to look at is the path to an adultery. Now, nobody in this relationship, I mean, imagine right now you guys would say, I don't want to go there, right? But it never happens overnight, right? It never happens overnight. It's actually any big fall is actually a thousand little steps walking towards here of compromises that we get there, right? A thousand little steps of saying, whoa, what's a big deal? I'm not doing anything wrong. Little small little things of just pushing closer to the edge, right? So first I want to go over is the path of adultery. And I see even in 2 Samuel chapter 11, it teaches us that there are certain things that we need to avoid. If we take the wrong path, even if you might at first try to be very innocent, like, well, I'm not going to do anything wrong. But if we keep on practicing, it makes our heart hardened or makes our heart very unwise and very undiscerning also as well. So the first part is in verses 1. Could I have Edward Cole read me verse 1 while I catch my breath?
In the spring of the year, the time when kings go out to battle, David sent Joab and his servant with him and all Israel. And they ravaged them from Ammonites and besieged Rahab, Rabbah, but David remained in Jerusalem.
Yeah. Now, here to begin with here, we have to put this passage in its context. 2 Samuel chapter 11 is situated in the flow of 2 Samuel. Is 2 Samuel is about the reign and the rule of David. Finally, in 1 Samuel, that he was trying to be king the whole time, and God was very slowly, you might even say almost too slow, but God did that to develop patience in David, where you see the reign of Saul, then later eventually David takes reign. Then finally, you get to 2 Samuel, you finally see he fully was ruling as king. And you see he did a lot of good things. The Bible describes him as a man after God's own heart. Yes?
Yes.
But then when we look at 2 Samuel chapter 11, it's situated as in the context in verses 10 to 12. It is really brilliant what's going on in 10 to 12 is actually Israel was in war, was in a time of war. And the war was during the time when King David was the king. And the war was with the Ammonites. If you look in 2 Samuel 10, you see, right, that even if you look at your title, for instance, in the NSB, it says Ammon and Aram defeated. Right, and it talked about like all these wars, and then you go to 2 Samuel chapter 12, verses 26 onward, it talks about Joab fought against Rabbah, the son of Ammon. So in between here, they're fighting a war. But while all these things were going on with war, something was going on very fishy in the capital of Israel, in Jerusalem. It turned out that David was gonna fall into great adultery and was involved in a really great sin. Now, the very first aspect of path to adultery is usually oftentimes what happens is, I hope you guys will understand. When I say this, it might seem like, what does that have to do with adultery? But I think if we keep on doing these things, it will be very dangerous in opening this up. The very first path of an adultery, as we see in verse 1, is that David, or we, you and I could be like this, we were not, or he was not, responsible even in the small things, right? Even the small things. Now you might say, well, how come I'm not faithful at doing like small things, like say, for instance, going and showing up at church on Sunday? What does that have to do with anything with that? I would say, usually when we compromise with the big little things, we start thinking everything in the big things. Oh, it's okay. It's okay, right? After a while, it's okay. It's acceptable. Then after a while, the big things seem more okay. So you're more like less shocked or bigger sin, quote unquote. Now, with this passage, you see in verses 1, David is supposed to be in battle, yes? We see this in the beginning part of verse 1, which it didn't happen in the spring, at the time when kings go to battle. So kings back then would lead in the front. Not like today, right? I know the presidents today have like, what, thousands of hundreds of bodyguards, like the Secret Service, there were over 2,000 agents or something like that. I mean, it's just ridiculous, right? But back then, kings would lead, you know, would go to war. They didn't stay in the rear with the gear, as the Marine calls it, right? They were in the front with the grunt, right? Just over there hopping and popping, shooting and looting and everything else, right? But we see here that David was supposed to be a warrior, leading, going to battle, but he neglected his role. As you see in the second half of verses 1, that David instead sent Joab and his servants with him and all of Israel, and they destroyed the sons of Ammon and besieged Rabbah. And so notice here that he's supposed to go to battle, but it revealed that, hey, he just sent everybody else would. But notice the last sentence of verse 1. David stayed at Jerusalem. Now, I think it's also worth today is you can bet if there was to be your friend or co-worker or an acquaintance that they come to you and say, you know what, I've been cheating on my marriage or my relationship, right? You can bet when you ask, hey, how's your Bible devotional life? They're probably going to say, yeah, my devotional life is not good, right? If they are, they're very likely lying to you, right? They say, oh yeah, I've been great in doing my devotional, right? I've been great in studying my Bible and applying it to my life. Like, really, right? You know, so usually you see that, right? Oftentimes, with any sin, usually as well, especially like life-enslaving sin with idolatry. They're not doing well with spiritual things, of even the small things, right? You can bet with that also as well, they're not doing their devotional. So you see the path to adultery, you see that even here, you see David was no longer being responsible in the big things, right? Sometimes some people want to be in an adultery relationship. Even in the secular world, even non-Christians, sometimes hold back because they realize, oh, I have children, I cannot forsake them. Because there's a responsibility that roped them in, right? Now, of course, as Christians, we have to do it more than just because there's children involved, right? But if there's no more children, if they're growing up, does that allow you to go through it? But responsibility is one of those things that hold you and say, you know what, I cannot, there's too much to lose here also as well, right? Second path to David to adultery that we see is in verse 2. And that is having too much idle time in his hand. Right? Too much idle time in his hand. Verse 2, could I have Chris read that too?
One evening, David got up from his bed and walked around on the roof of the palace. From the roof, he saw a woman bathing. The woman was very beautiful.
Okay. Well, an idea, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So verse 2 here, I think we established that one of the other things with him, why David did fall also as well, was now that he wasn't doing what he's supposed to do, then if he's not doing what he's supposed to do, then he's doing something else that he really is not supposed to do, right? And you see here in this case, he had too much time in his hand. He wasn't doing anything. He wasn't productive. And he's idle. And whenever anyone's idle, that's when weird things start happening, right? People, when they don't work, weird things, they start becoming really weird. And you think, I never noticed that guy was weird before. Well, yeah, they were always like that. Every one of us, you guys realize, every one of us have it within us, this tendency to be a monster of various kind, murder, whatever else. Because why? It's because of our sinful nature, right? Now, you see in this instance here, he was idle, he wasn't doing what he's supposed to do, and he just took it easy, he relaxed, right? And notice, and I established that because it was evening time. And then it became morning, and he woke up from his bed, and where was he at? He woke up in his bed. Was he in his throne room, ruling? Rather, where was he? He was in the... Where was he at? In the roof of his house. Now, back then, people would have on rooftop to put fences, because oftentimes, when you have guests over, when you have a lot of party, actually, people will go upstairs to the bed. That's where people hang out and talk and everything else, right? And downstairs was to sleep and store things, right? So, in other words, this guy was, if I could give this as an analogy, David here was not at work. He was not in office. Instead, he was in the living room, just watching TV, just watching whatever, anything else, and was not doing anything else, right? And is this guy going to be in trouble? You bet you, right? As soon as he's in trouble, all of a sudden the TV turns on, or just the daylight turned on, and he sees a woman. And a woman was bathing, and she was very beautiful. Suddenly, with idle time, saying, oh, you know what? I've been pleasing myself all this time. I have leisure. You know, he's probably drinking his sweet lemon iced tea. Sipping, asking his servant, hey, you know, Edward, come over here. Be me, you know, grace. Or whatever else he's doing, right? All these things. And suddenly, he's all pleasing himself. Suddenly, he sees a woman, and he's been living this life for weeks, wanting to just please himself. Sees a woman. Then he says, I'm all about pleasing myself now. And he would want that woman also as well. So you see the path here towards adultery. It might seem at first very small. Like, what does it have to do with laziness with everything? What does it have to do with vital time? What does it have to do with being responsible? It does everything. Because all of that, when you neglect all those things, you start pleasing the self. And when the self is king rather than God, then you say, yeah, why won't I get a woman or a man if you're a woman, etc., right? So you see here, this is what ended up happening. Is the second path towards adultery was he just had idle time. Thirdly, and notice, actually, we'll look at the paths towards adultery. Is we have two more points. We've looked at two thus far. But I want to call your attention to the next two points. Notice the following, or actually what's going on, is boundaries that are broken. In other words, safeguards for a relationship or marriage, or even for those that are single or in a relationship, that should be there to protect us, that are there for wisdom to protect our relationship, suddenly are being broken. And I could imagine if Dave could say, what? Someone came up to me early on and said, well, I'm not doing anything wrong. But slowly, the wiping away of the conscience, right? The third aspect of the path towards adultery is in verse 3. And that is, he started cultivating the desire to know the other person. The desire to know the other person, perhaps a little too much also as well. Verse 3, could I have Nancy too? Read that. We're just going through chronologically now. Okay.
And David sent someone to find out about her. The man said, isn't this Bathsheba, the daughter of Gibeon, and the wife of Uriah the Hittite?
So we see the third aspect is the path of adultery. You see his guard is already down. He's no longer being responsible, doing responsibility, and he's all about pleasing himself. Then he had idle time. And now added to this is he sees someone that he wants. Notice now he desires, hey, I want to be with this person that he probably shouldn't be with, right? And in verse 3, we see that David wanted to know more about this woman. And actually went around asking, hey, who is this person? So could you imagine, how would anyone know who this lady is unless he went around and asked other people, hey, come up here also as well and look and tell me, right? Just the audacity, right, of what he's doing, right? He wants to find out more information about her and probably information that he shouldn't have to know, right? I mean, if I can say one thing, this guy's a stalker, yes? He's a stalker. He's the type of guy that says, oh man, let me see this person's Facebook, whatever else, right? This guy is stalking. He wants to know who this person is. He's finding a mutual friend, and I'm going to find out this information about it, and I'm not going to go, and I'm going to just happen to be on by when they're just there on an occasion, and he's just happen to be visiting that person's church, and boom, right? You see, this is a path towards adultery. I mean, talk about real life, right? People sometimes say they don't like the Bible because it's not real. I actually think the reason why people don't like the Bible sometimes is because it's too real about the sin. Human condition is too real. I mean, this is, 3,000 years ago? And this is the human condition still today. The fourth path towards adultery, you see, after all this, now his heart is burning and yearning. Say, now I know more about them. Now he has this false intimacy. Well, it's not a real intimacy. He knows so much about her, of things she probably doesn't even know he knows. But now because of that, it grows, right? It grows, information grows. And you guys realize part of love is you want to know more of each other, right? Just like if you love God, you want to know more of God. You need to ever deep more ways, right? And if you don't, then there's something you might question in your depth of love also as well. But with this, now the knowledge of that person is like sticks. It's like wood thrown into a fire. It's feeding it and fueling it, right? Things of information he's getting. And you even see, what's this? It's building and it's developing the fire even more and more. Then the fourth path you see is that now he starts spending time with the other person, right? Now verse 4, could I have Oscar read me verse 4?
David's messengers and took her, and when he came to him, he lay with her.
Yeah.
And when she had purified herself in her unclean, she returns to her house.
Yeah. So with verse 4, we want to look and focus on the first half of verse 4. Suddenly he knows about her, but that's not enough, right? Actually, I would also say sometimes even one of the things to hold back, to protect a foolproof our marriage also as well, is the more you know about a person that you are inclined to be, the more it's not helping, right? The more you get to know information and talk to him. But now it feels to the point that say, hey, you know what? David just sent messengers to her. You probably use an excuse. I could imagine the first time meeting with her, say, you know what? You're the husband, you're the wife of Uriah. He's like one of my, I mean, he's like one of the good guys, a warrior, right? He was a very good Marine, right? Or whatever else. And then it begins very innocent, and I says, oh yeah, I want to treat you out. But notice after a while, by spending time with them, you know, knowing that if the danger of that is real, right? Now, in the story here, the focus is on David. If you notice, reading one of the things for me reading through 2 Samuel is I'm amazed that it's almost like God is like a cheetah. You know, like when the cheetah hunts? A cheetah only looks for one animal, and he goes after it. He doesn't hunt any other ones, right? Even if you worm past the other, you know, deer and everything else, because if you look at everything else, you're going to go and not get anything. It's almost like God is like a cheetah. He's going after David alone. Now, are all these people involved? Are sitting? Are there other people sitting and sitting pretty into 2 Samuel 11? Yes. Joab, who later will be involved in the killing of Uriah, etc., right? Bathsheba, because she wasn't raped, she was a willing participant. But I can't help but to wonder, in the story as we read here, David sent a messenger, and he probably just said, you know what, if Nathan were to confront him at the moment, he probably said, I'm doing nothing wrong. All I do is just treating one of my best warrior's wife, just to say I appreciate him. You know, how dare you, Nathan? How can you not support the troops? I can imagine saying that, right? Now, you see the temptation here for the men and the women is very different, I would say. And David, instance, he's not even really intimate. He just wants, you know, the physical action. But I imagine for the woman, even for myself thinking when I was in the Marines, we were going to go to Iraq, I remember there'll always be women, and they always told us to avoid women in the ATM machine, near, on base. Because those are all the Marines' wives, of all the Marines that deployed ahead of us in Kuwait waiting for the war. And you just look and you're just so sad, man, people are unfaithful in marriage, right? Now you see, it could happen either way, guys or girls, right? And you can imagine, like, her husband is gone. And she doesn't see her husband. And he's probably a very good warrior in such a way where he's deployed all the time, and rarely does she spend time or sees him. And she's lonely, and now she sees this company of a great warrior also as well. You know, something's drawn to her of the husband, and David probably had the same characteristics, and probably a very manly man, warrior. These attributes that she sees in her husband, also in David, who's now before her, the temptation of wanting to be intimate, of companionship is really real for her. Whereas David here, if you even look at the story, I mean, he's not personal, he's not looking for a relationship, right? Guys are not usually accepted in that sense, usually, all the time. It's more physical, I think, with that. The relationship's not going well, and they just have urgent physical need. Notice that he even calls her just woman, right? If you see earlier, that everywhere the description is just woman when talking about David as a subject about her, right? Now you see here is what happened as a result of spending more time with the other person. He came about to fulfill the sin was he broke his marriage vow and she broke her marriage vow and she and David ended up committing adultery. In other words, sexual relationship has occurred. Now, in this case, God hates adultery, yes. Because covenant, marriage is a covenant. And you see here, these are the four paths. And then we see the characteristic of an adulterer. I think it's changed today in our workforce. It's slowly eroding, right? But you kind of still see it today. When usually in a company, when someone has an adulterous relationship with a co-worker, usually that's not good, right? And they're usually asked to leave, right? But today in this world, people have no shame. Some hold on to their jobs, right? Politicians have no shame today, right? I mean, New York governor, what's that guy's name? Anthony Weiner, right? The guy who's been sending pictures of himself to others. Now he's come back to politics to run for something greater than a congressman. He's running for governor. I mean, people have no shame today, right? Now, you might ask, why is it sometimes it was so harsh? You know, if you're in the military, if people, officers, have an adulterous relationship, you know they remove generals for committing adultery, right? They remove generals, they remove colonels, they remove officers. If pastors were to have a sexual immorality, guess what happened to pastor? He's gone, right? He's out of the booth, right? And some of us might say, well, how come Christianity or even Western culture can be so mean? And I think the reason why is not because it's so mean, it's because adultery is actually one of those sins that actually corrupts the whole soul much more than most people think that it's just a physical act. Notice in verses 4, the characteristics of an adulterer is one of hypocrisy. You see that in the second half of verse 4? After David and
Bathsheba were laying, they had sexual relations. Notice the second half of verse 4. And when she had purified herself from uncleanness, she returned to her house.
What does it mean?
She purified herself for her uncleanness. Now, you know your Old Testament. When people have sexual relationship, they are considered ceremonially unclean. It doesn't mean they're simple. Just considered ceremonially unclean for whatever reason, with the whole ritual and stuff like that. So she is obeying the law of God. Is that kind of weird? She's breaking the law of God by having sexual relationship, but then she's ironically obeying. Okay, now that I have sexual relationship, I'm going to go to the temple and make sure I offer everything else. And then, like, you know, could you imagine the priest, if they know her, like her pastor, so to speak? Like, okay, like, wait a minute, her husband Uriah? Oh, well, I'll just do this, you know, whatever else. And she's, in some sense, being very hypocritical still, right? When you notice that, and that's one of the things with every adultery is, it isn't just only the physical act that is wrong. Oftentimes, it's the whole corruption of the whole person's soul. They end up being a hypocrite. They end up, in order to have an adultery, they end up lying, right? They're living a whole lie between their friend, their spouse, and everything else, right? They're living a lie. In other words, they're living out of a real integrity issue. And if you are lying to others and lying to yourself, you're one that is not reliable for anything else, right? You're not reliable for anything else because you yourself are self-deceived also as well. The other characteristics you also see within here is, you see is also that there are consequences, right? Verse 5. Sophie, could you read verse 5 so that I can read?
I'm pregnant.
We'll probably pick it up the rest of the chapter next time. I know it's getting late. But I just want to note that there are consequences, right? There are consequences. This lady conceived and has a child, and she's now pregnant. But usually with adultery, people will go to every extent to be a hypocrite and to be a liar, right, to cover it up. How far would David be willing to go? We pick this up in verse 6. David realized he's in trouble, right? You don't have to be a mathematician. You don't have to teach math to realize, wait a minute, he's a ploy. How would he have, you know, 9 months and all the other things? Wait, something's wrong here. So David realized he is in trouble. So he's going to try to cover it up. But notice here, and this is what I want to show the ugliness that, of sin, is that don't forget, there is a real God out there. A real God that if you mess around with marriage, if you mess up, mess around with the marriage, that God will actually discipline you, right? David is a powerful person, yes? He's a king, right? Kings usually get what they want. But in this rest of the story here, no longer will he get everything that he wants. You see, he's going to try. But everything along the way, God is frustrating him, right? David now thinks, okay, if I bring Uriah back, from the battlefield back home, and if husband and wife meet each other, they do things, right? Then maybe I can get off the hook this way. Notice in verses 5, David said to Joab, who he said to be in charge of the army, saying, send me Uriah the Hittite. So Joab sent Uriah to David. When Uriah came to him, David asked concerning the welfare of Joab and the people and the state of war, right? This cover, this hypocrisy, this lie. Notice this irony of this lie all along. Like, oh, yeah, I want to care for you, how you're doing in war. I want to care about the men. But really, he's really caring about himself, right? Then in verses 8, David said to Uriah, go down to your house and wash your feet. And Uriah, does he obey David? I love this beautiful irony. David is king. He gets whatever he wants. That's what we see in verses 1 to 5. Suddenly now comes, he doesn't get everything he wants, and he has a soldier here that is disobedient. Uriah the soldier here, right, is disobedient, right? But we go on, and it's a sad tragedy. I mean, this beats Korean drama, the drama here, right? I mean, this is like, wow, right? This soldier is disobedient to the king. But he's disobedient in a way that it shows that he has more faithfulness than the very king that he's serving, who just backstabbed him and cheated on him, right? Verses 8, go to house, and Uriah went to the king's house, and a present from the king was sent out after them. Verse 8, but Uriah slept at the door of the king's house with all of the servants of his lord, and did not go down to his house, right? Did he go back home? No. This guy actually reminded me about when I was in the Marines, our battalion commander, when there was a holiday, I forgot what holiday. This is when we activated to go to Iraq. He had a family and everything else, and he said, you know what, for the holidays, I will sleep in the barracks with all you guys, with all you men. And everyone just think like, oh, that's weird. Your family. You have a family. You have children. You have a wife. Why don't you just go home? And he said, no, I love being with men. I love being my warriors. If my Marines ain't going to be have a family and everything else for the holidays, then I'm going to be here. And then he ordered, like, you know, whatever else, food and everything else. You're like, oh, that's kind of cool. I mean, this is like a manly man. Hey, imagine, that's Uriah right here, right? This guy was such a warrior, such uberly hardcore, probably a Marine, but there's no Marine back then. Here we see that Uriah, right, decided not to go back home when all his men were away from home and they're in battle. He's thinking, oh no, what about them? I need to think about them. And instead, he stayed at the house of the servant of his Lord. Verse 10, David then was like thinking, could you imagine David's thinking, oh no, this is not working according to my plan. He's been getting all that he wants all along, and now this guy comes and he's thinking, jerk. But then he thinks, I can't say this because I'm the one that's wrong and I need to cover my tracks. Verse 10, now when they told David, saying, Uriah did not go to his house, David said to Uriah, have you not come from a journey? Why did you not go to your house? Uriah said to David, the ark and Israel and Judah are staying in temporary shelters, and my lord Joab and servants of my lord are camping in the open field. Shall I not then go to my house to eat and to drink and to lie with my wife? By your life and the life of your soul, I would not do this thing. Notice this. It's also a slap in the face. Uriah probably didn't realize this, right? He said, I love you, King. I'm so loyal to you. Man, I'm not going to like go back. But then, along the way, he said, you know what? All my men, all our men are fighting and dying. How can I just enjoy life? I mean, could you imagine David here for a moment? He's thinking, man, I really don't like this guy because he's implying that he's going there. If I'm greater, then I need to be there, right? You can imagine this hatred is slowly building up that we will later see is actually going to be very dangerous, right? He's already upset at him. He doesn't know it. He's just all innocent. He's like, you know, I'm your bro, man. I'll go to combat and die with you. And he's thinking, man, I don't like you because, you know, I'm in trouble. And now you're saying all these things. And I know you're not doing it purposely, which makes it even worse. You're making me very convicted here, right? Then we go on in verses 12. David said to Uriah, stay here today also, and tomorrow I will let you go. So Uriah remained in that day and the next. Now David called him, and he ate and drank before him, and he made him drunk. In the evening he went out to lie in his bed with his Lord's servant, but he did not go to his house. He's thinking, oh no, I have to figure this out. Maybe if I make it one day, then he realized, oh no, I need to go back home to see my wife real quick and have action, and then go back to see other kind of combat action, right? And then he's thinking, this is maybe we add alcohol, and this, but you see that this guy was such a uber Marine, right? I was like, he's like, you know, angry drunk instead. Like, you know, I want to go back to combat, whatever else. You know, I'm being a little bit. He still didn't go, right? And could you imagine the next morning, David is probably like, oh my goodness, I really, really hate this guy. He's doing nothing that I want. All my life I've been getting thus far, all that I want, and now I don't get it. Man, he's so bad and I hate this guy so much. Ooh, I wonder what it'd like if we were to kill him. Oh, maybe if I were to do that, right? Now you see, people in adulterous relationship, no one out of nowhere would say, I want to go kill my wife or my husband. But it's a thousand little steps of just angry, a thousand little small steps of sinning that lead them there, right? So you see here, the next morning, Joab sent a letter to say, notice his character has been changed now, right? This is a king, David. Unlike Saul, he went out to combat all along. Now, because of his sin, he's changed. He's changed, right? He's changed. He's become everything else that he was not before. He used to be a man that leads in front. Now he no longer takes responsibility. Now you see here, another aspect of change is that David always tried to save his men from dying, right? He's always trying to save his men from dying in combat. Now, because of adultery, it changed his whole character because of this whole sin of wanting to be a hypocrite. Now, in the next morning, verse 14, he sends a letter. And that letter, in verse 15, if I could summarize it in NLT, non-literal translation, my paraphrase, is that he just wants to, you know, he told Joab, hey, put Uriah in the front line, in the middle of the battle, tell all the guys, leave him behind, and let him be killed, right? I mean, talk about what has happened here, right? You know, warriors have a code, right? Never leave another whatever behind. Never leave another Marine behind, right? And people live by that. People get injured. People go to crazy extent. Sometimes even have more people die to get that one guy that is injured, right? And here this guy, David has become now the very opposite of what he's always been known in his legacy and everything else before. And all this is stemming from his self-righteousness, from his hypocrisy of even the adultery, right? Could you see this? He's telling even now that he has no shame. He even told the other warriors, hey, go against your very own ethical code of making sure you never leave a man behind. Pull back. Do you think the other guys listened to David? I don't think so. Verse 16 describes that when they were pulled back, that there are other, in verses 17, the men of the city went out and fought against Joab, and some of the
people among David's servants fell. In other words, others died. They didn't just have this one guy hanging. I imagine the other guys were told that, and they said, how could we do this? So now you see, because of one sin, in order to cover one sin, now there's more and more devastating consequences, right? More and more devastating consequences. And Uriah died. And Uriah died. And when we go on with the story, we see that, you know, Uriah died. He had all these things. And it almost looked like it's a perfect crime, right? Perfect thing. The guy is dead. He's okay now. All these things have happened. Now that, he's dead now, I can marry now this lady, right? He thinks it's all okay. And if you look down with me in verses 26, now when the wife of Uriah heard that Uriah, her husband, was dead, she mourned for her husband. When the time of the mourning was over, verse 27, David sent and brought her to his house, and she became his wife. Then she bore him a son, right? And it seems like almost at this moment, say, wow, everything, a perfect crime, a perfect thing got away with. In fact, matter of fact, in verses 25, earlier, David sent to the messenger to send to Joab, who he told Joab to do all these things. What did he say? God says to Joab, do not let these things displease you, for the sword devours one as well as the other. Make your battle against the city stronger and overthrow it, so encourage him. He's basically saying, you know what? Everything that happened, forget about it in your eyes, right? Forget about it in your eyes. But then you look in verses 27. All these things, perfect crime, he was thinking, man, that's several months ago. I got away with it. But notice verse 27. The thing that David has done was evil in the sight of the Lord. I mean, chapter 12 is the Lord sends a messenger, right? You might say, oh, that was a sin a few months ago. But God is not relenting. He goes after it. Now, my purpose mainly today is, I know we're short on time again later today, is I want us to see that sin has consequences. And I think sometimes we need to see this to realize this is the end goal. It's not pretty. It's very ugly. They end up in divorce and everything, and all these things that's ugly. All of this is to say, do you really want to go there, right? Proverbs is true when it says that the way of a sinner is hard. Do not think if you were to want to desire or entertaining your heart, what it would be like. That is a very safe thing. It's actually a very, very dangerous thing. That's why it's so important sometimes to see the consequences. And I want to encourage you guys to listen to the audio of last month's thing about cultivating a jealous love together, right? All the last few months of things about how to grow the marriage thing, that's important. That comes all together. We need to focus on the marriage and everything else. Because if you only think in your mind, don't commit adultery, you will, because you keep on thinking about it. You have to think about God more. Matter of fact, you have to love God more. And find out all the reasons why you have to love God more than your own selfish desire, than even more than that girl or that guy that might be prone to tempt you, right? And I want to show us today, just mainly to see this is the ugly consequences, is if we do not guard our hearts. So I think with this, as a way of application, probe yourself. You may say, even if you're not married right now, you're just a boyfriend and girlfriend, what does that have to do with me? Even right now, see where are you at even when you're boundless, right? Because boundaries in a relationship are training wheels that you would take to your marriage for life, that you would also guard your heart with other women, or men also as well, in your life later on with others. Let me stop at this point here. Any questions or comments or critiques?